My name is Kurt Spokas. If you weren't here earlier, I am with the USDA ARS, and the title of my talk, once it comes up here, is The Impact of Biochar Field Exposure on Greenhouse Gas Potentials. So how I got involved in all this biochar work was first looking at the impact on greenhouse gases, because that seemed to be one of the major playing cards that the biochar had to offer. Now I'm starting to look at what happens after we have these biochars in the field. But I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself, because I first want to talk about this weathering. Weathering is a very common phenomenon in the geologic circles. In the soils pedology circles, we also talk about it to some degree. Weathering encompasses all physical and chemical changes. We have chemical transformations of chemical redox, we have chemical oxidation, but at the same time we also have physical alterations occurring. We have the changing of the particle size, either due to freeze-thaw forces that actually cause the particles to break down. We also have desiccation cracking occurring that actually allows water to get in there and then with freeze-thaw cycles open up the particles. So overall, all of our physical processes typically lead to particle size reductions. These processes are driven by a multitude of factors. We have climate, wind, we have the input of solar radiation. We have all of those factors interplaying with one another. We also have the factors of topography and geography, where you're located on the planet, if you're on a mountaintop or if you're in a valley, is all going to have different weathering reactions. We also have to account for their soil. We can actually get our biochar protected in clods, which all of a sudden then wouldn't expose it to weathering. So the interplaying of soil with the climate factors is important. Most of all is time. All of these reactions are going to be occurring, and we really don't understand all of the time scales yet for all these processes. And we also know that animals, both the soil micro and macro vertebrates, as well as humans, have an impact on this weathering phenomenon. In the literature for black carbon, this is commonly referred to as aging, conditioning, or weathering. These are all the same titles given to all these same processes. So what do we know from the literature if we look at charcoal weathering? We first had a study back in 1925 that quoted that charcoal's absorption behavior is a function of how charcoal is stored, treated, and conditioned after production. What they primarily were looking at here was activation. But the interesting part was they didn't even look at the temperature that the charcoal was produced at. They saw that these storage properties had more dependency on the overall absorption properties. So let's look a little bit at what the literature has. The next study, we looked at the impact of a laboratory aging of a char that they made in a muffle furnace, similar to some of our biochar production strategies. Over on the right, you see the difference in methanol breakthrough curves. What they primarily were doing was putting methanol through a column of this char and looking at how much and how long it took the methanol to come out to be detected at the end. So in essence, the further the curve is to the right, the more absorptive capacity that char had. What they did is they aged their char for different periods, ranging from 2 days up to 78 days after production. These were in high relative humidity environments because moisture is known to be one of the aging factors. You can see what they found just in the aging of 78 days at ambient lab temperatures with the presence of moisture, they almost doubled the capacity of the absorption for methanol. This didn't occur universally. This weathering phenomenon was a function of what they were looking at as their absorbent, the versus nonpolar and polar components. For hexane, which they looked at was their nonpolar, they had absolutely no impact for these 78 days of weathering. But the nonpolar absorption was drastically impacted. So if we look a little more and we look at charcoal, according to the U.S. Guide of the Code of Federal Registries, charcoal is a spontaneously combustible material. That is the official title for charcoal. There are all restrictions on how it can be transported, how it can be shipped. There has to be a certain criteria met before the char can actually undergo transport. What does this all due to? Primarily, it's the surface modification of charcoal that's occurring even at ambient conditions. One of the other pivotal studies in the early history of the black carbon research was back in 1920 with Sheldon. He was looking at the absorption of nitrogen gas on chars. He conducted his experiments in 1 year, then it was about 3 to 4 years later, he re-ran the experiments to prove that that data was correct. All of a sudden, instead of duplicating the same sorptive capacity, he saw that there was almost a threefold increase in the nitrogen sorption capacity of that char that was just stored in his laboratory cabinet, not in a high relative humidity environment, just in a container like we would store any chemical in the lab today. But just by having that storage for 4 years, that char changed the absorption characteristics for nitrogen. So now we go from the 1920s, looking at more of some of the current research that's being done on biochar. You have to remember that biochar is a black carbon. What we have in Yao in 2010 is he actually utilized what's commonly done in geology for accelerated mineral weathering, is using a Sokolec reactor and exposing it to a high oxidative solutions. What they noticed on their biochar was that they had formation of these carboxyl acids and carbonyl functional groups. He also noticed a very rapid pH change, and you can see that in the graph on the right. Where the pH of the original char was about 9.2, even less than 5 minutes of weathering, the pH dropped down to about 7, or about a neutral value. He also noticed that there was an extraordinarily quick loss of calcium, followed by magnesium and then potassium. Overall, this is a change from the typical geological weathering patterns. We usually don't see calcium being the most weatherable mineral. So this was another little insight that this calcium leaching from the biochar weathering is an interesting phenomenon. So we have a couple other studies that have continued this weathering on the biochars. Chen in 2009 looked at a temperature sequence of various naturally produced chars and charcoals in nature and brought them back to the lab and exposed them to different temperatures. They saw that the temperatures was a definitely controlling factor of this growth of the oxygenated groups on the char. There was also a recent study by Joseph in Australia where he had two different biochars exposed in the field. He also saw that there was increased population or numbers of these oxygen-containing groups on this carbon that they retrieved. They also noticed that their O-to-C ratio changed from about 0.2 up to greater than 0.7. This is a very troublesome part because the O-to-C ratio, as you heard in some of the earlier talks, is directly related to our chemical stability. The less oxygen we have on a black carbon, the more stable that black carbon actually is. So what have I actually done? I have some plots up in Rosemont, Minnesota that are all part of the USDA Biochar Paralysis Initiative. In these plots currently, I have 7 different biochars that I'm looking at their impacts on a continuous corn in Minnesota. For the talk today, I'm only going to be focusing on the underlying biochars, and I'll get to the reason for that in the next slide. The first is a fast paralysis hardwood. We're also going to be looking at a fast paralysis macadamia nutshell, then also a slow paralysis hardwood char, and a slow paralysis wood pellet char. The production temperatures of most of these were about equivalent, about 550 to 600 degrees C. The major difference is the feedstock type and the actual process or the time that it's at those temperatures, with slow paralysis being a longer residency time, fast paralysis being the shorter times. So first, just a little glimpse of the Minnesota climate. Our average temperature is about 7.4 degrees C. We have about 750 millimeters of precipitation. When I first gave this overall average, I was down in Brazil, and they said, oh, you guys are really cold. However, you look at what of our extremes are in Minnesota. Our minimum air temperature, we have gotten down to minus 35 degrees C in 2010 when these chars were in the field. On the flip side, we also got to 39 degrees C air temperature. So even though we have an average temperature of 7.4 C, we do have a lot of temperature variability in Minnesota. So now, why did we particularly pick those 4 biochars? It had a lot to do in our ability to recover them. how we actually retrieved these biochars in the field, we took a surface soil sample about 0 to 5 centimeters, and we selected the chars due to their larger particle size. Because the only way that we knew how to separate these effectively was with manual sieving and tweezers to pull the chars out of the soil. And that's what we did. Once we got the chars out, we did rinse them in DI water because the chars were just caked with soil particles. And the only exception to this was our hardwood sawdust char. That one is a very small particle size, but we actually created about a 3 to 5 centimeter layer of this biochar that we just left out in the field for that year to get the field aging of it. So the first thing I want to show you is what the visible microscope pictures look like for these chars. What we have on the top left is the wood pellet slow paralysis char, and on the bottom is the hardwood slow paralysis char. A lot of you have seen biochar, and it's nice and black. That's what we've kind of seen in these pictures. So what actually occurs during the weathering process, having these chars out in the soil? The first thing you notice is some of that dark black coloration has disappeared. It's more of a darkish brown now in terms of the coloration. The other thing that you notice is that we kind of have this peppered appearance, where we have still soil, even though we rinsed the biochar to eliminate all of the surface soil, we still have soil that looks like it's impregnated in all the various pores of the various char particles. So one of the techniques that I am looking at in terms of the weathering potential of biochars is the scanning electron microscope electron diffraction or electron dissipation energies. What we basically do is hit the char with an energy source, and that's typically an X-ray source, and we look at the dissipation of that because the dissipation of energy is directly related to the atomic compositions. So from this, we can see changes in our profile, and it gives us a little bit more of control to pick out areas or regions of that material to look at the chemical composition. What you see on the bottom of the slide is the results of these EDX analysis on the fresh char and the weathered char. The one thing that I want to draw your attention to is the fresh char, we had no aluminum or silicon. You can see in our weathered char, all of a sudden we have 10% and 4% aluminum. This we feel is directly linked to the soil that's getting into the char pores that originally were air-filled and now they're soil-filled pores. You also see in this char that we lost all of the phosphorus that was originally in the char. There wasn't very much to begin with, but we did lose that. And you can see here the tremendous loss of the calcium that was mentioned in that 2010 study. We saw that in our chars here. But we didn't see the leaching of any of the potassium. Instead, we actually saw an increase, and again, we attribute that to the soil getting into there. You can see in this picture that we have a difference in the reflectance or the appearance in here. And this is largely due to just different surface properties. Either it's particles of soil that's absorbed to it or it's changes because of the oxidation of that carbon surface. So I said that we had four of these different chars. And now you can see the overall comparisons of all the fresh and weathered for these EDX compositional analysis. And you can see almost universally, and I've highlighted those aluminum, silica, and oxygens, you can see that we've increased all of the aluminum and silica content of these chars after weathering. Again, I attribute that all to the soil being trapped in the pores. You can see we still have some where we leach the potassium, some where we leach calcium, but overall we're left with a real puzzle because how are we going to be accounting for that amount of soil that's in that char particle to get what's truly happening to our chars? So one of the other common analysis is an ultimate proximate that's done on chars. And I did this with the weathered and the fresh chars. The only thing that struck me was the universality of the pH changes. You can see over on the far right, we had typically alkaline conditions for all of our chars. What has happened, you can see some of the pH changes aren't as drastic. But you look at what happened with these wood pellet chars, we went from a pH of 10.1 all the way down to a pH of 5.7. This is just due to the one-year field exposure out in the soil. And the soil in Minnesota, we still are a calcareous or alkaline soil. We're about 7.4, 7.8 in the unamended soils. So how we are able to get this acidic material in that environment is a little bit of a question. The other things that were striking as our drop in fixed C, the drop in the increase in the overall volatile matter content of the chars, and our overall increase in the ash content of the chars. Again, I don't know how much to attribute this to the actual biochar versus the soil that was impregnated into the pores. So one of the other facets that I'm doing in my lab is looking at all of our sorbed organic compounds that are present on these chars. And I'm not going to get too much into this today, but this is just the overall comparison of one of the hardwood sawdust chars. In the bottom, you see the fresh scan, and in the top, you see the field weathered. The basic story is we lost a large percentage of those volatiles. With this technique, we can come up with an estimate of how much volatiles were actually lost due to evaporation, volatilization, or microbial degradation. And for that hardwood sawdust, we have about a 90% reduction in the total organic compound content. We also lost some in the hardwood sawdust, the hardwood slow pyrolysis one. For the wood pellet chars, our actual organic sorbed content was higher after field exposure. Notably, we had higher propanenol, butanol, acetone, and the 2-butandienones. These are very common microbial products that the soil microorganisms are producing. And remember that wood pellet was one that changed the most drastic in pH. So all of a sudden we see that we've actually sorbed organic compounds from the soil environment onto our chars. And the macadamia nut only was about a 20% decrease. So the title of the talk was the impact on the greenhouse gas emissions. So I took all these various chars and then incubated them. And what I wanted to show you was just the detailed results for one of the chars. This particular one is the hardwood sawdust or the fast pyrolysis char. The initial fresh pyrolysis char decreased CO2 activity. As we added more and more char, we got a larger and larger suppression of the CO2 respiration in that soil after we corrected for the abiotic contributions of the CO2 from the char originally. So what happened after weathering? We had an entire shift. Instead of it correspondingly decreasing the soil respiration activity, you see all of a sudden when we started adding different amounts of char, we actually had a stimulation depending on what the particular weight additions were of the char to the soil. But then if we added too much of it, we still got suppressions, nowhere near the suppressions that we saw initially. So overall, it depended on how much we added and what overall was happening during this weathering. So this here kind of was an indication that, yes, we have some changes, that the initial results that we see of the chars for CO2 might not hold after weathering. What about nitrous oxide? So here we see on the top graph the same where we added different amounts of the biochar to the 5 grams of soil for the fresh biochar on the top and the weathered on the bottom. They're not as drastic as our CO2 changes, but we still have some significant alterations. The overall reduction in the nitrous oxide production potential is not as great after weathering. The more troubling aspect is if you look at the lower amount contributions in the bottom graph where we added just the 0.1 and the 0.3 grams of the biochar, even though it's not statistically significant in this particular example, we had an increasing trend in the nitrous oxide production. So all of a sudden, with weathering, our biochar has gone from suppressing nitrous oxide universally to now it gets a little more complicated. We have to worry about how much char is intermixed with the soil, but we could actually get an increase in the nitrous oxide production. The methane oxidation is another big area of this biochar additions. For the fresh biochars, we saw a complete suppression in the methane oxidation activity in the soil. However, with our weathered biochar, you see again it's a function of how much we added to the soil, but we see it regions where we actually can increase the methane oxidation capacity of the soil with weathering. So overall, what I've done for these four chars now is compare our responses of the various gases back to the original non-weathered biochar. For CO2, we have three of the four that have increased CO2 respiration after weathering. The nitrous oxide, we have two that have lower degrees of suppression. We have one of the chars, that wood pellet char, actually stimulated nitrous oxide production for all amendment amounts. And the summary for the methane oxidation picture is most of them all of a sudden stimulated the methane oxidation activity of the soil or reduced the suppression that we saw initially. So where does this all leave us? Just like chars, a biochar name does not refer to a homogeneous product, weathering is not universal. We have so many different factors going into weathering, we can't make any predictions yet, except that weathering typically has resulted in lower fixed carbon and increased ash. I can't put my fingers on the exact amount because we have the contribution of all that soil that's clogged into those pores. Three out of the four of the weathered chars had increased CO2 respiration. The biggest question is, what does this mean in terms of our carbon sequestration potential of biochars? The O to C ratios actually indicate that we have significant weathering occurring. That all of a sudden makes these biochars extremely labile for mineralization. So this is an area that we really have to look at and how to reduce this weathering effect. We also see that there's enhanced methane oxidation in three out of our four. And in general, the suppression of the nitrous oxide was reduced with weathering. And even one of the weathered biochars increased nitrous oxide production from the soil after adding it. So overall, the conclusions are this weathering alteration is going to have a significant factor, particularly when we're doing life cycle analysis or trying to forecast what this means in a 2-3 year time period. And with that, I'd like to thank all my students, because without that, none of this would be possible, as well as my technician, Martin Ducer, as in all the companies that have been able to provide me biochar for this research. And thank you very much.
Dude. The increase in CO2 respiration that you observed following weathering, is that on a per carbon basis in the char itself? In other words, how do you know that that increase in CO2 is not due to the absorbed DOC
on the char?
Mineralized, you have isotope to separate char carbon, because in your initial ones it was just the char, and now you've got char plus DOC absorbed.
Yeah, DOC absorbed plus other soil particles added in. Yes, we are currently working on the isotopic analysis of all this data. It's turning out to be a very complicated picture because we often assume that for stable isotopes, when we get the isotopic signature of the biochar, that we know what it is. However, this weathering and the oxidation of that char, the isotopic signature of that CO2 does change. So all of a sudden, even though we might have a minus 23 biochar, the CO2 that results from the release from just the biochar itself, that isotopic signature varies. So it's going to be a difficult task to tease out all of these factors. And I haven't normalized it over to the carbon content of the biochar because I don't know how to separate out the carbon between soil, adsorbed, and char yet. And so that's still underway, and I'm trying to think of different ways to tease it out. I tried to use a sonicator to put the chars in to try to get all the soil out of the particles, except I weathered that char to an absolute almost ash.
So that's really an apples and oranges comparison.
It is on one hand. Yes, it is apples and oranges because we don't know exactly what is contributing to this. The aspect of it that I'm primarily focused on is the N2O reductions. Because all of a sudden, we have the same type of addition. Granted, it's weathered, there's other things absorbed to it, but that is what's going to be in the field. And so even though, yes, I can't attribute the exact amounts to what is coming from the char versus a char-induced phenomenon, there is an alteration in the behaviors.